Thank you to Murari Gupta Prabhu and all others who've made this festival possible again. First started which year? 2005. So what year is it? We missed how many years for lockdown? 2 years were missed, or 3 years? Anyway, it's been going on. It's been going on for quite some time. It started off as a get-together for my disciples in this area. And it's expanded so that others are also coming, including we're blessed today with the presence of His Holiness Prahladananda Maharaj, who, as formality, I'm sitting above, but actually he should always sit on my head. I'm sure he will do as soon as he sees anything wrong, because that's his job, part of his job. And part of my job is to sit on your head when I see something wrong. Not the only part of the job, but it's part of it. So this festival, by Murari Gupta Prabhu's generosity, has always been free in the sense that no fees are charged, but although donations are welcome. It was never meant to be a free-for-all. Terms and conditions apply. Specifically, we ask everyone to attend the programs. And it started off like this, that we should have only Vaishnava dress and no beards or long hair for men, although times have changed. But I'm sometimes called a dinosaur, and I prefer to see things the old way. In this regard, I'm going to read from a quote from Srila Prabhupada's purport to Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, chapter 20, text 70, regarding Sanatan Goswami coming into the presence of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Varanasi. At this time, Sanatan Goswami had just escaped from being the most successful Hindu of his time in his area. Those of you who are concerned with being a material success can remember, there's not much in this part of the world. In India, most of our devotees are very concerned with becoming the householders, becoming successful. So we can remember Sanatana Goswami, Tyaktva Turnamashesha Mandala Pati Shrening Sada Tuchavat. He and all the other Goswamis of Vrindavan, they gave all that up, their high position, as insignificant. Anyway, when Sanatana Goswami came into the presence of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Varanasi, he had long hair and a beard. Srila Prabhupada writes, due to his long hair, mustache, and beard, Sanatana Goswami looked like a Daravesh or hippie. Since Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not like Sanatana Goswami's hippie features, he immediately asked Chandrasekhar to get him shaved clean. If anyone with long hair or a beard wants to join this Krishna consciousness movement and live with us, he must similarly shave himself clean. The followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu consider long hair objectionable. So I request at least those present here who are initiated devotees who think that their bag of stool and bones, etc., is made more attractive by having some of the stool transformed into hair on their face to shave it off. That is not the subject matter of this class. That's the introduction. Now you're laughing. Let's get a little less giggly, okay? We can talk about serious things. We're all very happy, and we like to laugh, but we should laugh, but when we're discussing serious topics. Sometimes I make humorous comments, so I can be blamed also. Anyway, I'm going to read now from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Leela, chapter 24, text 260, from Srila Prabhupada's purport. Srila Prabhupada writes, "It is not that a grihastha should live at home until he dies. Vanaprastha is preliminary to sannyas. In the Krishna consciousness movement, there are many young couples engaged in the Lord's service. Eventually, they are supposed to take vanaprastha, and after the vanaprastha stage, the husband may take sannyas in order to preach. The wife may then remain alone and serve the deity or engage in other activities within the Krishna consciousness movement." Srila Prabhupada wrote this in the mid-1970s. "There are many young couples in this Krishna consciousness movement engaged in the Lord's service. Mostly at that time, the devotees in ISKCON were young in age, mostly less than 30. And Srila Prabhupada was very happy with the young couples who engaged in the Lord's service, but he also pointed toward the future, that they should not remain. Well, anyway, they're not going to remain as young couples forever. They're going to become older couples, and he's pointing them toward vanaprastha life. Present among us here today, and all over the world, there are many couples who have gloriously, praiseworthily remained as couples in Krishna consciousness since their youth and are now at the stage where they can start to think of moving on to the next stage of life, varnashram. In the ashrams, there is, after grihastha ashram comes vanaprastha ashram. So, although it is glorious, actually at the modern age it's glorious, although in other ages it's just normal for a husband and wife to marry young and remain married, in the present age, it's something exceptional and praiseworthy if they don't separate or divorce. So what is praiseworthy at one stage of life becomes blameworthy at another. And I'll read as I go through this. I may not finish in this session. I'll read from this. I'll read and we'll come to this, but I'm making this point because several of you here and many others throughout the world are at the stage of life where they've been married for many years, they've had children, the children are grown up, and then they have to think, now I'm getting old and death, the signs of death are there. As the body gets older, it's visible. We can tell who is young and who is old simply by seeing the face. It's obvious. The material energy is giving us signs that we don't have much time to live. Of course, that could be said even of a newly born baby. But particularly those who are getting older, they've been through family life, it's time for them to think of that stage of life which is conducive for renunciation, which, and which one may fully absorb in activities of Krishna consciousness. So I'll elaborate on this in this talk. Gradually, now I'm going to read from the introduction, the introductory notes to the 19th chapter of the 9th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, in which Maharaj Yayati achieved liberation along with his wife, Devayani. He was, he's in the Srimad Bhagavatam. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, we have the accounts of very pious people and very impious people, both. Accounts of devotees and accounts of demons. The devotees whose activities are recounted are great, very great devotees. Their examples are given. So Maharaj Yayati, although much of his life may appear to be inglorious, it ended gloriously. Another example of that is, of course, Ajamil. Now Maharaj Yayati was not impious like Ajamil. He was a pious householder. But despite being a pious householder, he, and a devotee of Krishna, he had to go through so much trouble due to material entanglement, which you can find out by reading that narration of Yayati and Devayani and Sharmishta in the 9th canto of Bhagavatam. Yayati's marriage with Devayani is what in India is called a love marriage. There's arranged marriage, which is still the norm, and there is love marriage. Love marriage means boy and girl meet, they fall in love, and they lived happily ever after, in the fairy story, nowhere else. Recently, a group of devotees came to me and they wanted to get on the case of one Grihastha devotee who is giving family advice to others. And they said, do you think it's right that he should give advice to other couples when he himself has domestic problems? So my reply was, is there any family without problems? Is there such a thing as family life without problems? Life in the material world means problems, and family life is set up for making problems. It's like two incompatible species coming together, and somehow or other they have to, yeah, the older householders are grinning in acknowledgement, and the brahmacharis think, what's he talking about? They have to find out for themselves if they don't believe it. That is why it's glorious to stay together, because it's so much easier just to had enough of that. I'm going to go and find my real Prince Charming or Cinderella or whoever it is. But it is difficult, no doubt. And to tolerate and stay together and go on in Krishna consciousness is glorious. Anyway, it was a love marriage, and it's frankly described how Yayati and Devayani, not explicitly, but frankly, explained how Yayati and Devayani engaged in sexual activities for many years. (Clears throat) We find that in the in the Shastra, in Ramayana. It's the story of Vishvamitra is told in the court of Maharaj Janak by one of Vishvamitra's disciples. He goes through the whole thing of how Vishvamitra was so envious of Vasishtha, and how he fell down, and how he eventually came up again. And Vishvamitra is sitting there listening, and everyone praises Vishvamitra. They openly tell about all the difficulties where he went through, and they fully respect him for what he is now, and they don't look back at the past. Similarly, just before that, at the ashram of Gautam Muni, when Rama, by entering there, simply by entering, although some versions say that he put the foot on the stone, but Valmiki Ramayan doesn't mention any stone, and simply says that Ahalya, who had become invisible, she became delivered by the entrance of Rama and Lakshman. And Rama and Lakshman, she took her form, again, after so many thousands of years, and immediately Rama and Lakshman bowed down to her as a respectable goddess, wife of a rishi, not blaming her or thinking, well, she was phew, unchaste woman. They didn't think. They immediately bowed down. And she's considered respectable up to the present day. So anyway, Yayati, he went through a life of material enjoyment. And then, as the introduction to the 19th chapter states, after many, many years of sexual relationships and enjoyment in the material world, King Yayati finally became disgusted with such material happiness. That's a great step. Doesn't happen to everyone to become disgusted with material happiness. If one goes on hearing throughout life, even if it may be hard to hear, many things in Shastra are hard to hear. There are things we like to hear and things we don't like to hear. There are many things in Bhagavatam that we might not like to hear. Pungsastriya mituni bhavametam tayoraho hridya grantimahu. Ato griha kshetra sutapta vitaya janasya mohoyam ahammameti. The basic principle of materialist existence is attraction between male and female. And when a male and a female join together, then a very strong knot of attachment forms on the heart. And from that union, because woman is called stri, or she who expands, then it is required home. One requires a home to live in. One requires some property. One identifies with one's home and property and children and money and relatives, and in this way one is illusioned, thinking in terms of I, me, and mine. So there are many such verses which are pinching, no doubt, especially for grihasthas. Yan maitunadi grihamedi sukham hi tucham is another line that Srila Prabhupada often quoted, that the happiness of family life begins with sex life, and it's all insignificant. So it's very pinching. But one should consent to hear such topics throughout life. Stane, what is that verse? Gyane prayasamuda pasya namanta eva jivanti sanmukharitam bhavati avartam. Sthane stita shuti gatang tanuvang manobhya ye prayasho jitititopi apitai strilokyam. Giving up the endeavor to understand Krishna by one's own, or to understand the absolute truth by one's own intelligence. One should simply become humble and hear from devotees. One can stay in one's position. In other words, it's not, now that may seem to be contradictory to the whole topic of vanaprastha, but everything has to be understood contextually. So a grihastha doesn't have to renounce immediately. He may stay in his position, but he should go on hearing from devotees about Krishna, topics of Krishna consciousness, and by such an endeavor, he can conquer the unconquerable, namely Krishna. And those who are sadhus, they may speak in a manner which is not very pleasant to hear. Hearing about Krishna is very pleasant. Hearing the teachings of Krishna is not always very pleasant, although they're non-different, and we need to hear all of it. There's that verse in that regard. What is that? Satsu sajeta buddhiman. What is that verse? How does that begin? Anyone? From Bhagavatam? Can look it up. Satsu, look up the word. S-A-T-S-U. Anyone? Atodu sangam visrija. Satsu sajeta buddhiman. Santa evasya chindanti manovya sangam uktibihi. If one is intelligent, understanding at least theoretically that this material world is miserable and I don't belong here, but still being attached to it, but having enough intelligence to understand that I need to hear about this world being miserable, I need to hear topics of Srimad Bhagavatam, then one should give up bad association and associate with sadhus. And sadhus, the definition given here, is one who cuts our material attachments by his words. And demonstrating this, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that a sadhu is like someone, like the in the sacrifice, the animal is to be sacrificed. And so the animal which is to be sacrificed is tied up, and the sacrifice, they come with a sword and cut viciously. So who cuts? Who, just like cutting the head of the animal, the sacrificial animal, so the sadhu should cut the material attachments. So Yayati, he was a pious householder, so no doubt while indulging in sexual activities and all other attributes of materialistic happy life, so-called happy life, no doubt he went on hearing from sadhus, serving sadhus, engaging in pious activities, and as a result of that he became disgusted. We won't become disgusted unless we hear about these things, because the whole atmosphere all around us in the material world is one of, it's, we hear about conspiracy theories, but we're all part of one big conspiracy theory. We're all members of it. We're all bolstering up each other's illusion that this material world is a place of happiness. Just like here in Croatia, when we meet someone in the morning, we say, Dobar dan. Right? Is that right? Yeah. Dobre utara. Good morning in Russian. Is it the same in Croatian? Probably very similar. What's good about it? If we say it's another day of wasting our lives, then what's good? But it's important in every culture, at least in the Western world, to fortify each other's illusion that actually the world is very nice. So we're all part of the same scam. And don't blame all those big conspiracy theorists or the big conspiracy enactors, because we're all part of that conspiracy to keep each other in the material world. Anyway, King Yayati finally became disgusted. So my aim in giving this talk should be to at least plant the seeds of disgust in your heart. And if you walk out of this talk disgusted, that's it. My job is done. Of course, I also have to become disgusted. But if we don't discuss these things, then we don't become disgusted. That's a very good beginning. As long as we're trying to enjoy this material world, we'll never get Krishna. We like to think of joining the pastimes of Radha and Krishna, but we are warned, kam, krodh, lobh, moha, madadi, abhishta, eshab, nachare, kise pabe Radha Krishna. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who went through the show of being a materialistic household, but who is actually one of the greatest devotees ever to decorate this planet by his presence, he rhetorically asks that kam, krodh, this lust, anger, greed, pride, envy, illusion, and so on, as long as we are absorbed in all these inauspicious qualities, then where is the question of obtaining Radha and Krishna? We want to go to the spiritual world bringing our garbage with us. There's no garbage in the spiritual world. All the garbage belongs down here. We have to get rid of that. So, King Yayati finally became disgusted with materialistic happiness. And this should be the aim of every householder, even those who are just getting married. In Krishna consciousness, should think, I'm entering into this as a religious duty with the aim to come out, because the aim has to be to go back home, back to Godhead. And we don't go back home, back to Godhead with material desires. So the Grihastha ashram is also an ashram, which means it's meant for spiritual cultivation. There is a license therein for material enjoyment, which those who are in Krishna consciousness are not supposed to indulge in very far, but it may happen. It's not that everyone's a self-controlled yogi. It's not a very easy thing to control the mind and senses. But the Grihastha ashram is meant for a little indulgence with the clear focus on Krishna consciousness. But that little indulgence one should also become disgusted with. And King Yayati, when satiated with material enjoyment, devised a story of a he-goat and she-goat corresponding to his own life. And he told the story to his wife. He told the story of a he-goat and a she-goat. And she could understand, I'm the she-goat, and he's the he-goat. He didn't go up to her and say, look, we've been in Maya all these years. But he told a story as follows. Because you know, if you've read the ninth canto of Bhagavatam, how Yayati came to marry Devayani. It was unusual circumstances. He first came across her when she was completely naked, due to having a quarrel with her friends, girlfriends. They'd thrown her in the well naked after bathing. Yayati told this story. Once upon a time, while a goat was searching in a forest for different types of vegetables to eat, by chance he came to a well in which he saw a she-goat. This is what happened. Yayati was just happened to be around when Devayani was in the well, and he pulled her up. Well, first of all, he saw she was naked, so he gave her part of his cloth to cover herself. He, talking about the he-goat, became attracted to this she-goat. Generally, male humans don't become attracted to she-goats. There may be some cases of extreme perversity, but generally not. And you think, how could you be sexually attracted to a she-goat? But the male goat is attracted to the she-goat, and the attraction of a man for a human man for a human woman is on the same level of the attraction of a male goat for a female goat, or a male pig for a female pig, and so on. So he became attracted to the she-goat and somehow or other delivered her from the well, and thus they were united. One day thereafter, when the she-goat saw the he-goat enjoying sex with another she-goat, she became angry, abandoned the he-goat, and returned to her Brahmana owner, to whom she described her husband's behavior. You have to read the whole, I won't tell the whole narration now. The Brahmana became very angry and cursed the he-goat to lose his sexual power. Thereupon the he-goat begged the Brahmana's pardon and was given back the power for sex. Then the he-goat enjoyed sex with the she-goat for many years, but still he was not satisfied. If one is lusty and greedy, please listen very carefully. If one is lusty and greedy, even the total stock of gold in this world cannot satisfy one's lusty desires. These desires are like a fire. One may pour clarified butter on a blazing fire, but one cannot expect the fire to be extinguished. To extinguish such a fire, one must adopt a different process. The Shastra therefore advises that by intelligence, one renounce the life of enjoyment. Exactly what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita about giving up lust, as Maharaj was quoting yesterday. Jahi Shatram Mahabaho Kama Rupa Durasadam. By intelligence, one should kill the enemy, the implacable, insatiable enemy known as lust. Without great endeavor, those with a poor fund of knowledge cannot give up sense enjoyment, especially in relation to sex, because a beautiful woman bewilders even the most learned man. Not even necessarily beautiful woman. We've heard it so many times that we take it as normal, but it's actually shocking, that verse. That matra swasra duhitrava navivikta sano bhavet balavan indriya gramo vidvangsan apikarshati. That one should not sit close to even one's mother, sister or daughter because the senses are so powerful that they can bewilder even the mind of a learned person. It's shocking, isn't it? Who would think to be attracted to be their mother, sister or daughter? But Shastra warns us. And Shastra is generally studied by pious people. Very dangerous. The mature world is very dangerous. We're not aware of how dangerous it is. Therefore, we should study these parts of Bhagavatam also. King Yayati renounced worldly life and divided his property among his sons. He personally adopted the life of a mendicant or sannyasi, giving up all attraction to material enjoyment, and engaged himself fully in devotional service to the Lord. Thus he attained perfection. Later, when his beloved wife, Devayani, was freed from her mistaken way of life, She also engaged herself in the devotional service of the Lord. So they had a long life of sense enjoyment, but in the end, they renounced and became Krishna conscious and went back to Godhead, which is somewhat different from the life of many of the grihasthas here, who are deliberately Krishna conscious. They've chosen Krishna consciousness as the center of their life. We don't find that in the narration of Yayati and Devayani. But they went back to Godhead, because at the end of life, they became Krishna conscious. I think of Yayati and Devayani as what we would nowadays call pious Hindus. They like, especially I was just in Gujarat a few weeks ago, traveling in Gujarat, and I've always thought of Gujaratis as being like demigods. They love Krishna. It's very natural for them to chant Hare Krishna. They respect sadhus. It's changing a lot now, but still, I'm talking about the higher class people especially. They're mostly vegetarians. Very good people, very nice people. But they're also very materialistic, but in a pious way. They like nice houses, now nice cars, nice food, nice family. So I think of Yayati and Devayani as pious Hindus. Eventually, they had to yank themselves out. Yayati took the lead. They yanked themselves out of the pious life of pious sense gratification, and they went back to Godhead. This chapter, the 19th chapter, the narration of how Yayati and Devayani achieved liberation, begins the first verses. Shukadev Goswami said, O Maharaj Parikshit, Yayati was very much attached to woman. In due course of time, however, when disgusted with sexual enjoyment and its bad effects, he renounced this way of life and narrated the following story to his beloved wife. Text 2. My dearly beloved wife, daughter of Shukracharya, in this world there was someone exactly like me. Please listen as I narrate the history of his life. By hearing about the life of such a householder, those who have retired from householder life always lament. The purport to this verse by Srila Prabhupada. Persons who live in the village or town are called Gramanivasi, and those who live in the forest are called Vanavasi or Vanaprastha. The Vanaprasthas who have retired from family life generally lament about their past family life because it engaged them in trying to fulfill lusty desires. Prahlad Maharaj said that one should retire from family life as soon as possible, and he described family life as the darkest well. Hidvatmapatangrihamandakupam. If one continuously or permanently concentrates on living with his family, he should be understood to be killing himself. In the Vedic civilization, therefore, it is recommended that one retire from family life at the end of his 50th year and go to Vana, the forest. When he becomes expert or accustomed to forest life or retired life as a Vanaprastha, he should accept sannyasa. Vanangato yadharim ashrayeta. Sannyasa means accepting unalloyed engagement in the service of the Lord. Vedic civilization therefore recommends four different stages of life: brahmacharya, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyas. One should be, please listen to this, this is a very, very heavy statement. One should be very much ashamed of remaining a householder and not promoting oneself to the two higher stages, namely vanaprastha and sannyas. Yeah, so this is aimed particularly at those who are at that age. 50 years is given. Generally, that can be understood if one marries at the age of 25 latest, if the man marries at age 25 latest, then at the age of 50, he, in the normal course, would have a son old enough to take charge of household affairs. Then he can turn it over to the eldest son and leave home for the sake of spiritual realization. That doesn't always happen nowadays. But that is the, if life is organized systematically, the scientific division of Varnashram, as Srila Prabhupada talks about, then it should be that by the age of 50, one's household duties can be over. The body, normally speaking, at the age of 50, should still be quite strong. The body and mind should still be quite sound. It's a good time in all ways. And one should have been through family life and experienced what is to be experienced and be ready for the next stage. I'm now going to read from Srila Prabhupada's purport to Canto 9, Chapter 19, Text 11 of the Bhagavatam. When one is bound by affection for one's wife, one is attached to sexual desires that are very difficult to overcome. Therefore, according to Vedic civilization, one must voluntarily leave his so-called home and go to the forest. Panchash ordvang vanang vrajit. Human life is meant for such tapasya or austerity. By the austerity of voluntarily stopping sex life at home and going to the forest to engage in spiritual activities in the association of devotees, one achieves the actual purpose of human life. This purport, or this statement in this purport, is specifically aimed at men. Srila Prabhupada writes, when one is bound by affection for one's wife. So it's clearly aimed at men. It is for the man to take the lead, the husband to take the lead in quitting life, not the wife independently. According to Vedic culture, nastriyang swatantriyam arhati. Women should never be independent. In their childhood, they should be under the protection of their father. During the span of life, when they're married with their husband, then they're under the protection of their husband. And then when the husband leaves home or dies, then she is under the protection of her eldest son and sons. Especially, Brahmana men are meant for renunciation. The higher orders, or the higher orders of society. For Shudras, there's only one ashram, Grihastha ashram. They don't study in the Gurukul. They live at home all their life. That's for Shudras, to live at home all the life. Grihasthas can become vanaprasthas if they have higher knowledge, if they cultivate higher knowledge, and throughout life cultivate a higher goal of life than simply sense gratification. Kshatriyas and Brahmanas can become vanaprasthas, and Brahmanas can go on to take sannyas. Especially those who are Brahmanas, they are meant for Vairagya, to cultivate tapasya. The wealth of the Brahmanas is tapasya. We see that in our current Krishna conscious movement, many devotees are very eager for taking Brahminical initiation, but they're not very eager to live as Brahmanas and to cultivate austerity, or even to worship the deity. Many of them say, I want to worship the deity, so give me Brahmin initiation. You give them Brahmin initiation and they don't worship the deity. It's just a symbol of prestige. But they don't live as a Brahmana. that is called Shvavriti, if one is employed by anyone else, that is the profession of a dog. So it's understood that anyone who's accepted Krishna consciousness as the goal of their life is, just by that determination, they are in a position above Varnashram. But at the same time, Srila Prabhupada, he wanted to establish Varnashram. And although we are supposed to be transcendental, it's often seen that we're not transcendental in our behavior. Therefore, there should be division of society into Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. And those who can actually live as Brahmanas and dedicate themselves fully in Krishna's service, even as a Grihastha, with no other activity for maintenance, they simply rely on what Krishna sends them, and they act for their own spiritual upliftment and for the upliftment of others, they can be recognized as Brahmanas. Otherwise, if we have Brahmanas coming to the temple in their shorts and tank tops, and they're not Brahmanas. They may have a thread, but then what is the meaning of their thread if they're living like a Shudra? It's Brahmana life is meant for giving up sense gratification. There's no gross sense gratification in Brahmana life. The one thing, Brahmana bhojana priya. Brahmanas like good food. That's accepted. And if you want a secret, the best food in India, where is it? They have McDonald's in India now. Which restaurant is the best? No restaurant. Go in a Brahmana's home, and if they're so kind to feed you, it's the best. Everyone knows in India. So that's their sense gratification. But that must be also offered to the deity. A real Brahmana will not eat anything which is not offered to the deity. And in traditional life, you may say they like food, but they don't eat until midday or late morning because they have so many duties to perform. They have to rise early, do sacrifices, chant so many prayers, do deity worship at home and in the temple, and they don't eat until midday. When I first came to this movement, I thought, you get up before 4 o'clock and you don't eat till 9 o'clock. We're used to getting up much later, and then the first thing you do after brushing your teeth and not bathing is to eat. But it's such a long time, you have to wait until you eat. But in Brahmana life, then it's you may be up for 7-8 hours before you eat, and you have to see that guests are fed before you can eat. So they generally eat twice a day. And another observation of mine is that even today, if we see real Brahmanas, but I'm talking about Brahmanas by caste in India, means the culture is coming down for generations. They live in the family. Mostly all married, but they're not sensual. They have children, which means they obviously have sex, but they're not sensual. They're living a dharmic life. They're living for the sake of, well, I'm especially thinking of Sri Vaishnava Brahmanas. Of course, they're Madhva Brahmanas and they're Smarta Brahmanas, but they have a sense of dharma and living for spiritual life, which we really want to translate that into our Western devotees. Because the background here is one, it's so gross and sensualistic that it's very hard, it seems, to adopt that mindset of living a cultured life simply for the sake of serving Krishna. And for such men in such an atmosphere, they don't have gross sense gratification. And even though in modern India it's around them all the time, but they're just not, it just doesn't appeal to them. Of course, there may be some renegades, but it's just, it's not them. It's not for them. They live very. They, of course, so many people from Brahmana background are now going to Europe and America and using their good Brahmana intelligence. They're becoming highly placed in IT companies, and we have in America several. There's some Agarwal who's in charge of Twitter. Well, he's not a Brahmin by background, but then I don't know who the head of Google and Apple and this and that. There are many Indian, South Indian Brahmins. Their intelligence is used for Shudra work, but there are still some who are living like real Brahmanas, and it would be very helpful if you're going to enter into Grihastha Ashram just to spend a little time of your life and just see, spend time with them, how they live, and understand that this is how we should live. Anyway, for such persons, it is easier. I'm not saying it's easy, but it's easier to adopt renunciation. It's not easy, but it becomes easy. It becomes more natural that you reach a stage of life where you're not involved in sense gratification. And that used to be quite common in India. I'm saying India again. I'm not giving a talk specifically about India, but I'm talking about what should be useful for all our devotees here, how to live our lives. And then we have to look at the culture of India, because that is how people have lived their lives for generations, in a manner that is conducive to Krishna consciousness. And we should look to that. Otherwise, we're looking to the Western, what goes on in the name of culture, which is degraded, bestial, and leads to hell. So really, we should look to that. How people have lived. Yeah, and not only Brahmanas. It used to be very common, not with everyone, but it used to be fairly common that a man and a woman, after being married for some years, having a few children, even when they're still fairly young and sexually capable, just decide, okay, that's enough. We have children. We don't need any more. And they just mutually agree to follow Brahmacharya. They may not be even what we specifically on any spiritual path, but they just understand that sex, all right, we had it, we've done what we needed to do with it, and that's enough. That kind of culture we want to bring, where an intrinsic understanding that sense gratification is not in our best interest, and we should try to come out of that, or we should look to come out of that. Giving up sense gratification is for householders also. Unfortunately, we're addicted. It's like drug addicts. They maybe sometimes they think of giving it up, but practically they find it very difficult. But just like a drug addict can understand, if there's anything left in his brain after being wasted away by drugs, he can understand, this is destroying me. Somehow or other, I've got to come out of this. He can come out of it with good help, good guidance. He has to make a lot of effort himself. And then gradually he can come out of that. So Grihastha Ashram is meant for gradually coming out of that. And there has to come a point when we actually come out of it. There's those who have been through that. We've lived together, we've had children, we've fulfilled our, how long do we want to go on trying to fulfill our material desires? You come, all right, enough is enough. So we've mutually assisted each other in the family life. We brought up the children together. We've practiced Krishna consciousness together. We've served sadhus together. We've done so many things together. Now we should mutually assist each other to prepare for the moment of death so that we can both return home back to Godhead. For vanaprastas, there are two models. One is that the husband leaves home and travels to holy places and comes back time to time to see how things are going on, and the wife remains at home under the care of the elder sons, and she detaches herself to a large extent from the family matter, and she engages in more spiritual activities, a lot of chanting and hearing and puja and all these things. So there are two models for vanaprastha. We may think, well, we're already devotees, so what do we need to do? We'll stay at home together and chant Hare Krishna together. In this regard, I'm going to read from Srila Prabhupada's purport to Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, chapter 5, text 158, discussing about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's accepting sannyas. Srila Prabhupada writes, in the Paramahamsa stage, there is no need to accept a danda, staff, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was certainly in the Paramahamsa stage. Nonetheless, to indicate that everyone should take sannyas at the end of life in order to engage fully in the service of the Lord, even Paramahamsas like Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his confidential devotees follow the regulative principles unfailingly. So even if you think, I'm a Paramahamsa, my wife is a Paramahamsi, then still one should withdraw from family life. Here Srila Prabhupada writes, everyone should take sannyasa at the end of life, although elsewhere he writes that vanaprastha or sannyas, or take vanaprastha and later sannyas. The idea is that one should withdraw from the, what Bhaktivinoda Thakur in one of his songs says, shangshara fuka, which means the pandemonium of family life. There's always this going on, that going on, this, that. So many things. Just withdraw from all of that and concentrate on Krishna consciousness. Why get out of home? You can practice Krishna consciousness at home. But getting out of home is to help us to become detached, because it is the nature of the material energy that we become attached to whatever we have for even a short time. We start to become attached to it. And if we're in a position for a long time in the same house, same family, we become attached to it. So that false identification with griha, kshetra, sutapta, vitta, this is my house, this is my home, this is my country, these are my children, my relatives, my property. The feeling of being needed. There are many men, so I've heard, who they revel in their role as the head of the family. Physically strong, mentally strong, working, earning money, maintaining a big family. He's definitely the boss of the home. Good man, who everyone looks up to and respects. And he feels, yes, and he's very happy in that role. But there comes a time when the body wears out and he can't walk. He has to go in a wheelchair and he feels terrible. He doesn't want to even admit it. He still tries to get up and walk. And it's very, even though he's forced by material nature to be dependent upon others, he feels it to be horrible for himself, that everyone should depend on me I feel humiliated to be dependent on others. So that feeling of being needed binds us to a situation, not thinking that anyway I'll have to die soon and life will go on without me, but we think, I am needed. How can things go on without me? Famous saying from Charles de Gaulle, who was one of the great figures of France, nothing to do with Krishna consciousness, nothing to do with it, but in the 20th century, he said that the graveyards are full of indispensable men. Think about it. 8 o'clock is the cutoff time, is it? Supposed to finish the talk at 8 o'clock. I've got... Oh, I'm still on England time. So it's 9 o'clock. Just see, I'm so attached to England. Okay, we'll finish there. And hope to continue. There's a lot more. I'm reading from Srila Prabhupada's books. There's a lot of this stuff in his books. So I hope to continue in another session. Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.